Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young were at the height of their powers and their excesses when they reformed for a 24-city stadium trek in 1974 that David Crosby would term the Doom Tour. It proved to be an expensive trip with too many drugs and some of the tension that often emerges when the musicians get together. But musically, the foursome was never better, mixing a rash of new songs with blistering jams and the acoustic harmony that has been the band's trademark for decades. Big birds flying across the sky. They're throwing shadows on our eyes. Leave us helpless, helpless, helpless. At long last, we were able to get the final verdict on that tour with the release of a new 40-song box set, CSNY 1974, which was produced by the legendary two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Graham Nash. And it's my pleasure to welcome Graham Nash back to the roundtable.
Thank you very much, Ian. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. It's a great album. Congratulations on it. Sounds good.
You're very welcome. My co-producer, Joel Bernstein, and our great engineer, Stanley Johnson, wanted you to really be able to, in a way, kind of sit in the 12th row in the middle and experience what it was that we did. And the reason why there's so many songs on there was that was basically our set. I mean, these shows were like over four hours long sometimes. The way that we started basically was I wanted the best performance of every single song. And unfortunately, it's one of the reasons why Carry On, that was written by Stephen, one of our popular songs, of course, is not on the record, because for the life of me, I spent probably about 95 hours straight trying to figure out how to find a version of Carry On that thrilled me as much as the rest of the stuff did. And I was kind of upset, you know, because I couldn't do it. And I called Stephen and I said, Stephen, I can't find a version that kicks me in my ass, man. I just can't find it. And fortunately, he's a mensch, and he turned around to me and he said, Willie, if you think it's not there, it's not there. Don't worry about it. And that took an enormous weight off me.
Nowadays, everything, is recorded and it's much easier to archive this stuff. But how much of the actual tour was on tape for you to go back to?
Only 10 shows.
So that has to present some type of challenge as the producer, because as you say, you want it to kind of be representative of the whole tour, but I'm sure there were versions that you would have loved to have had on tape somewhere.
Absolutely. I mean, we two-tracked every show, you know, and I listened to all the two-tracks, you know. So I had to listen to, you know, 4 hours times 31 just in two tracks alone without even, you know, getting to the multi-tracks. But I knew in my heart that within all this madness, there was an incredible album to be made, and I think that we pulled it off. I've never been one to aggrandize myself. I mean, we've spoken before. You know who I am. I'm not one to blow smoke up our own skirt, you know. But I wanted to show people that Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young was a very decent rock and roll band.
The band has always kind of served as a mothership for you guys, and I wonder if you could take us back to 1974 and how the group came back together, you know, 5-6 years after first forming to do this massive tour.
The one thing that excites us more than anything as artists is new material. And we were all writing. Neil Young happened to hit a writing streak that was just unbelievable. As a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why he has more songs on it than me and David and Stephen do. I couldn't take off Push It Over the End. I couldn't take off Hawaiian Sunrise or Don't Be Denied or Revolution Blues. You know, he hit a writing streak, and that's what keeps us going. That's what we knew going into this tour, that we had songs to do. Yes, we had Love the One You're With. Yes, we had Teacher Children. We had Long Time Gone. We had Helpless. We had all that stuff. We knew that. But our thrill was that we had new music to play and a lot of it.
You know, the band has always kind of been a democracy. You've made much through the years of, you know, playing an equal number of songs in this set and things like that. And I wonder if there was a lot of concern about that from your end. You've mentioned, you know, there are more Neil Young songs than the other guys, but have you all sort of calmed down on the need for equal numbers at this age?
No. No, it's still going on. I have 24 new songs, right? Crosby has about a half a dozen new songs, and I know Stephen has new songs. But we only have so much time to do. I mean, our present-day shows are 3 hours. There's a 20-minute, you know, intermission, but they're 3 hours long. And we know we have to play Guinevere. We know we have to play Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. We know all that. But we keep writing these really good songs. So, what do you do? We have to take out stuff that they want to hear. We have to take out Marrakesh Express because I want to do this new song. And quite frankly, that desire to want to play new songs for an audience still exists in this band. But we managed to work it out.
The arena idea was pretty novel in 1974. Here you're taking a band known for being so intimate and harmonic and putting it in front of 80, 90,000 people. And I think maybe at this time we're forgetting just how new the idea was back then.
It was very new. The Beatles had done Shea Stadium, yeah, and the Rolling Stones had done some big gigs at Hyde Park, yeah. But this was the first tour, 31 shows of that madness. But with all due respect, we had played Woodstock. We had sung Guinevere with one acoustic guitar and two voices to 500,000 people. So it wasn't that big a deal to us.
You got the chance to announce that Nixon was going to resign on stage. What was that like?
Utterly fantastic. We knew, I mean, everybody knows we were very staunchly anti-Vietnam War. And the majority of our audience were the same way. And we knew, because of the secret bombing of Cambodia by Nixon and Kissinger that ended up, with the poor students being slain at Kent State, 3 or 4 years earlier. We knew that the Vietnam War was coming to an end. We knew that Nixon had been found out. We knew all about the plumbers. We knew all about Watergate. And it was delightful for me personally to be able to walk on stage and say, he's gone. I didn't even have to say who. They knew.
Did that change the course of that particular concert that night?
Yeah, it brought more energy to us because we, the American people, majority of them, kids, of course, but they realized that they do have a power if we can only get our trip together, that it is possible to change the world. And it's still relevant today. I mean, the smallest incident, can literally change the world. An example of that would be Mohamed Bouabizi in Tunisia. This kid who was selling vegetables to make money from a cart and being shook down by a police officer in Tunisia, and him saying, I've had enough of this, and burning himself to death in protest. That started the Arab Spring. That kid is one of my heroes. He will never know, because he's dead, of course, what his death did to the Middle East.
Tin soldiers and Nixon coming. We're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drumming. Poor dead in Ohio. Poor dead in Ohio. Poor dead.
I want to ask you a bit about your role here in the band. This project and pretty much all of the keeping of the flame is done by you. And I have to imagine that you maybe didn't plan on doing it that way, but you had the foresight throughout all the years to save the tapes and things like that so that you'd have a chance to go back at some point.
You're right. I'm very interested in history. I would really like to live another 100 years and see what the 60s and what the Beatles and what us and what Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell and Bruce Springsteen, what is going to be the opinion of them? I mean, we can look the other way and we can look, believe you me, I'm not making any comparison here, but we can look back at Beethoven and Mozart because, you know, it's history. We can look back at that and see what happened. We can look back at, you know, the turn of the 19th century in Vienna and all the meetings with, you know, that Gertrude Stein was doing and all the you know, all the great architects and artists and psychiatrists were getting together to talk about society. We know what happened in Paris in the 30s with Gertrude Stein. It's going to be very interesting to see how they look back at the 60s.
Speaking of which, you're going to be at Bethel Woods in our region on July the 5th. You just mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you know, your band kind of debuted at Woodstock, so big crowds are no big deal. But a few years ago, when we were celebrating the 40th anniversary of that, I read that you said you'd never seen the movie, and I wonder if that's still true.
It is still true. I've never seen it. I've never sat down and watched the entire three-hour thing. I must confess that people have shown me our bit, you know. There's an interesting project going on. I might get very involved in helping Warner Brothers do the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. Because I got a CD the other day from our engineer, Stanley Johnson, who works a lot on movies at Warner Brothers, of unreleased performances by Melanie, by the band, by Joe Cocker, by John Sebastian. Because, of course, you know, it was 3 days of music constantly. It didn't shut down at midnight, you know. There was a lot that has not been seen, and that kind of will be a challenge and a very interesting one at that.
And when you step out on stage at Bethel Woods, I mean, the place looks different, of course, and you have had a lifetime in between, but does it take you back to that same moment?
Absolutely. With all due respect, that feels like it was yesterday to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know it was a long, long time ago. I know it was 45 years, but it's still incredibly fresh in my mind.
Let me go back some years again to ask you about the song Wasted on the Way. People who follow your band know that was a song about the group itself and how you felt, you know, that maybe didn't get always to its potential because of the infighting and whatever. But here we are speaking in 2014. You've got this new box set, and you've made mention of the fact that all four band members are still alive and well. So what do you think's coming up next for CSN, CSNY?
Well, CSN have got two more. We're doing 3 tours this year. We've already done one. So we have 2 more to go, on the second tour of which I leave on Sunday for. We're still having a great time. We're still liking each other. We're still singing and playing well. We're still putting asses on seats. As far as CSNY is concerned, that's an entire other question. But in my dream, my perfect world, and it's only mine, I want CSNY to go out on a world tour in 2015.
You ended your memoir by saying that the jury was still out on your friendship with Neil Young. Has that changed at all since you've been, well, A, you published the book, but also now have been working on this set?
Yeah, Neil and I are okay. You know, we're all four of us are very strong individuals. You know, I mean, God forbid, don't piss us off, you know. But me and Neil are pretty cool these days. He knows I love him. He knows I have great respect for him as a musician. He knows that some of the things he does make me crazy. He knows all that. But he also knows that we can still do it. I think that's one of the reasons why he invited me and David and Stephen to sing with him at the Bridge Benefit last year. I know that he has multiple reasons for doing anything. And I think that one of the reasons why he wanted us up there was to see if we still had the passion. Because, and I love Neil Young for this, he's incredibly passionate about music. And he's incredibly respectful to the muse of music. And I have to, my hands, you know, you've got to give it up for Neil. He's incredible that way.
When you four or three do get together after it's been a little while, is it like an old glove or is there some weirdness at the beginning?
No weirdness anymore. No. When you say old glove, I go back to the OJ thing. So that's kind of a strange, but I do know what you mean. Yeah, it is, because when we did the Bridge Benefit, we hadn't played together since 2006. And it was like, you know, getting on the horse and realizing you know how to ride. I personally can't ride. You know, Stephen is the horseman in this band, because I've never seen Crosby on a horse, that's for sure. But yeah, it was like falling off a log, and it kind of surprised even us. I mean, you know, this band has never followed any of the normal rules of a rock and roll band, where you write and you go into the studio and you make records and hopefully they're a hit and you go out and promote it. We have never followed that rule. I don't quite understand how we have managed to pull this off all these years, but my goodness, I'm thankful. I'm thankful to still be alive. I'm thankful my partners are still kicking ass. My life's pretty good, kid.
Last question. If you could speak to the band on the eve of the 1974 tour from your 2014 vantage point, what advice or counsel would you give the group?
Less cocaine.
We've been speaking with Graham Nash, and he is the producer and, of course, appears on the new box set CSNY 1974. And Crosby, Stills, and Nash will be in our region July 5th at Duffel Woods. Graham Nash, congratulations on the box set, and it is always just a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Ian. Let's talk later.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
If they told you, you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.